In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hey guys, welcome to this very special edition of TFL Car Chat, because Tommy here just got to go see the rebirth of a classic American brand and the rollout of a new SUV and a new truck. So in this podcast, we're going to be talking about what those are, what makes them special. We're also going to be talking about what accessories they have, but let's get right to it. Tommy, where were you at and what did you see?
So I was just in Nashville, Tennessee, where they pulled the cover off the all-new Scout, Traveler, and Terra. So that's this new SUV and truck, which is a rebirth of a classic brand from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, now full disclosure here, we did own a Scout back in the day, remember?
Yes, but a little bit of a different thing. So what my dad's talking about is starting from the early 1960s, International had a model called the Scout, right? And it was sold in the 80, the 800, and then the Scout 2, and they sold it from 1961 through 1980 before they killed the model altogether. But now it's coming back.
Yeah, and so because we love off-roading and because we love classic American brands, we went and bought a classic American 1962 Scout that we owned for a while. So we are very familiar with the Scout brand. But since then, it has changed so much because it was purchased by Volkswagen, of all people, Tommy.
So the story is really interesting.
Yeah, let me know.
International Harvester owned the Scout brand during its entire existence in the 20th century. They killed it off in 1980, almost 44 years to the day from when they revealed the all-new Scout. Well, International kept building trucks, tractors, right, industrial equipment. And then a few years ago, a company called Traton actually purchased majority rights to Navistar International. And Traton is the heavy truck division of Volkswagen. So now Scout is launching as a brand underneath the Volkswagen umbrella. It's not marketed anymore as an International Harvester Scout. It's just simply Scout. That's the make. And then the models are Traveler and Terra.
Now, they are electric, so let's get that out of the way. But there's a twist, and we'll get to that twist in a second, because if you love internal engines, internal combustion engines, there is a version of that as well. But before we get to that, let's start with where we always start, styling, Tommy. I was on, so we premiered the video that you did of the unveiling, and I was on the premiere, and I was watching the comments, and a lot of people said that they didn't like the look of it. Now, I like the look of it a lot. I think it looks very modern, very fresh, very different from what's out there. There's a little bit of Rivian, wouldn't you say, especially in the pickup? Maybe there's a little bit of Land Cruiser in the headlights. Tell me about what you think of the styling.
You know, from what I've experienced with the community, they had a lot of old Scout owners at this location outside of Nashville, Tennessee. I've actually noticed quite the opposite.
Really?
People seem to really love the look of these vehicles. Even in the comments across TikTok and Instagram, I think they absolutely nailed it. So head of design is a guy named Chris Benjamin, who came from Stellantis, did a lot of work on Jeep for a lot of years. And what they did so right about this vehicle is they brought in a number of retro cues, like the little kick up on the rear end of the SUV, like they have a little curve in the bed of the Terra, which is reminiscent of the old Scouts, the way the headlight and grille are kind of inset. So they have looks and glances back at the past, but it's not a retro thing like a PT Cruiser or like a new Beetle. It still stands on its own as a really attractive vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, I do love the old Scout script in the name. I think that's really cool. And I think they hit that balance just right between, you know, giving a bow and a nod to the classic Scout, and yet at the same time making it new and fresh for today. Now, the thing that really surprised me, Tommy, when you told me this, was the fact that this is not like a Rivian. It's not like a Cybertruck. They went old school with a lot of different stuff that lives underneath. Tell me about that, would you?
So the big concern when we first learned about the Volkswagen connection is that this was going to be an ID.4 with a different top, right?
Yeah, sure. And which is what Volkswagen does.
And then we learned about the Volkswagen investment in Rivian. So then I think a lot of folks are really convinced, well, this is going to be a Rivian with a different badge on the front of it. The Scout is neither of those. This Scout is a ground up, they use the word clean sheet design. And I tried to speak to as many product engineers, marketing people that I could, and they all said the same thing. This isn't based on an existing Audi, Porsche, Volkswagen, whatever platform. This is a body on frame. No Ducati.
Not Ducati. Okay, good.
This is a body on frame SUV and truck with independent front suspension and a solid rear axle with front and rear mechanical locking differentials. It's a dual motor setup and a sway bar disconnect.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your car. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your car, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your car hassle-free and fast, go to tflcar.com and click Sell Your Car in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
So this is good old-fashioned off-road hardware in the 2027 era.
I have to say, I wouldn't be too upset if it was based on a Lamborghini. It might be a little bit more out of the price range, but we'll get to that in a second. So what you're saying is basically it's old school in its approach to off-roading, which I love.
Well, the thing that I think is most interesting, and I just keep coming back to this, is I tried to get a gauge with the employees, and there were 300 people at the Scout launch. It's the biggest press launch I've ever been on, to see how much Volkswagen had their fingers in the pot, right? How much of this leadership was coming from Germany? And the takeaway I had was, this is first and foremost an American brand. So they're headquartered in Virginia, their engineering and design center is in Michigan, and they're being manufactured in Blythewood, South Carolina, 4,000 new jobs. And it doesn't sound like there's really a lot of carryover or intervention from Germany. And I asked, like, what is shared between this vehicle and like a Porsche or Volkswagen or whatever? And the answers I got were only stuff like window regulators, stuff you wouldn't be able to see or experience is what's grabbed from the parts bin. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and let me kind of explain to you what I meant by old school off-roading. Now, let's compare it, for instance, to the Rivian quad motor, right, where you have four motors, each one turns each of the wheels. Now, when you do four motors, it allows you to do a lot of cool stuff, right? You can do real torque vectoring. You can do just a lot of interesting, technologically innovative things. But for some reason, at least in our experience, and we've off-roaded all these cars, there's no substitute for having a middle, front, and rear locker in terms of getting power down. Because when you have electric motors and then you're like writing an algorithm that tells you where to send the power, depending on whether it's on snow, whether it's on rocks, whether it's on gravel, yada, yada. You know what I'm saying? There's no substitute to just being able to say, let's send 25% of the power to the left wheel, the right wheel, the front right, and the front left, rear right, rear left, right? And it just seems to work the best. And so I'm super happy that they didn't try a lot of electronic trickery. They just went old school. And there's a price for that, right? Because lockers are heavy. They're also prone to failure, but they also work.
I wouldn't say they're prone to failure. I think that from like a Rivian perspective, they don't have the sophistication that they are trying to achieve in that vehicle, which is to say you stick it in a mode and you never have to engage. You don't have to turn anything on and off, right? But I'm with you that having that equal wheel speed that you get with locking differentials front and rear is, you know, a flawed system that you have to remember to turn it on and off, but it is the correct system in that it will always get you unstuck, versus relying on a computer to make the decisions for you. So I think that's a huge thing. Same thing with the manual sway bar disconnect, right? A lot of companies are working with computer-controlled hydraulic systems or electronically controlled systems. This is on and off, right? Just like the new Toyota Land Cruiser or Jeep Wrangler or Ford Bronco. It's either attached or unattached, essentially.
I mean, basically, if you're looking at it from an off-road perspective, it's a Bronco or a Wrangler with an electric powertrain in terms of its off-road tech.
Yes. Now, the thing which I want to clarify.
What size wheels and tires, by the way?
So 35-inch tall tires on these ones we're looking at. Yeah. It sounds like a 33 is going to be probably the standard tire.
But you can go 35s.
There's not a ton of hard numbers I can attach to this vehicle. Like I asked a lot of specs about horsepower, battery capacity, the range extender, gasoline engine. They're not willing to break lip on what that is yet.
Well, they did give you some numbers, right? They said a range of about 350 miles.
On electricity, and then 500 if you get the gasoline range extender.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the gasoline range
extender.
We'll
get there.
Okay.
But the thing I want to emphasize is that this is not really Wrangler. Because...
No, I said the tech from a Wrangler.
Sure.
With electric powertrain.
No, and I appreciate that. But this is a massive vehicle. I mean, we're talking something like 12 or 13... The truck, 12 or 13 inches longer than a Rivian. Mm. I mean, that's essentially...
So like a full-size truck.
A full-size truck.
Yeah, like a Cybertruck.
That Terra is kind of dimensionally similar to something like a Sequoia. Mm. I mean, it's a really big vehicle. And it doesn't... What's cool about it is it doesn't look that big in pictures, right? It's got kind of a tidy retro look to it, but it has the space that you'd expect in an American SUV.
Now, we do have some numbers, like you said. So they have said that it will have, in the EV version, a 350 miles of range, which, you know, look, I'm a little gun-shy when it comes to that because when Volkswagen unveiled the Buzz, which seems like a decade ago now, they also made some promises, and a lot of those promises, you know, we found that the range was actually much less, 230-some miles. The battery was much smaller, and the price was much higher. We don't know about this yet because, obviously, these are just pre-production concepts, right? Because we're looking at a 2027 release date initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let me ask you this. Tell me all about the range extender because that's the one that gets me excited.
So there's not a whole lot to talk about.
Yeah.
And the vibe I got from the Scout, folks, is that it was not an option that was intended from the get-go.
Mm.
It seems like in response to this vehicle being fully electric, maybe we're at with people's response to EVs, they actually had to make that pivot to introduce that range extender a little bit later in the development cycle. Now, here's what we do know about the range extender.
So it's an internal combustion engine.
Yeah.
We do know that.
So I got out of them that the battery is going to be smaller on the range extender version than the full electric
because
it takes up some space. I also got out of them that the range extender does not live under the hood.
Oh, interesting.
It lives in the trunk, kind of underneath the floor.
Yeah, kind of like an i8. I mean, an i3, sorry.
Yeah, kind of like a BMW i3.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
That's actually the only range extender that we've ever, a true range extender that we've had. Some people say the Volt is one, but it's really a serial hybrid.
A range serial.
I've been having cereal for breakfast. Anyway, what you get is you have an electric powertrain, and then there's an internal combustion engine motor that has no connection to the wheels. It's only there to charge up the battery.
When people ask, what's the difference between a range extender and a plug-in hybrid? And for a long time, the legal definition was a range extended vehicle has to go further on electricity than gasoline.
Yeah.
So it's primarily an electric vehicle with a gasoline generator as a backup that can help push you along to like a charger, for example.
Yeah.
Now, I think that was 100%, 150% the correct pivot to make, right? We're seeing a lot of sentiment from you guys in the comments, especially from the offer community, that are very skeptical, maybe against full electric vehicles, and having that option to just stick a jerry can in the back, fill up a tank if you need to, and run on gasoline is a huge win.
Yeah, and Volkswagen certainly has enough powertrains in their, you know, in their stable of internal combustion engine cars that you could. So the BMW i3 used a Kymco power internal combustion engine, which was basically a motorcycle engine or a scooter engine. And the problem with it was, as we experienced when we owned one, is that once you ran the battery all the way down and the range extender kicked in, it wasn't big enough to actually provide enough power to actually get you up I-70 at legal speeds. In fact, we were doing like 30 miles an hour going up I-70 past Georgetown running on the range extender. When we got to Loveland Pass, dude, we were doing like 18 miles an hour. So I'm hoping that it's big enough that you can maintain highway speeds and it's not just something that, you know, is there more for government regulations or more for marketing than it is for actual use. But I figure they'll engineer it in such a way that when you go off-road, you feel confident, like you said, that if you have a jerry can with you, even if there's no chargers, which there aren't at the trailhead for the most part, that you can still keep going.
So you bring up a good point here.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what they're going to do.
Yeah, we don't know. We just know that it's going to be a range extender.
No, but I don't even know what engine they're going to use.
Yeah.
But hear me out. Like, you're taking this. So imagine this, right? The Ram Charger is a new plug-in hybrid truck that Ram's working on.
Yes.
What is the gasoline engine in that vehicle?
We think it's the Pentastar.
It's been announced.
Yes.
It's for sure the 3.6 liter Pentastar V6.
Yes.
It's a big engine, right? 3.6 liters.
But it's also a big truck.
Yeah, but not much bigger than this truck. Dimensionally, Dad, this is a full-size truck.
Did they talk about towing numbers?
Yes.
How much?
10,000 pounds.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Yeah. So dimensionally, very large truck. Ram 1500 Ram Charger, 3.6 liter V6. That engine lives underneath the hood of the Ram Charger. There's no front trunk. This truck has a front trunk, and the gasoline engine would live where a spare tire lives.
So
I'm not done. Yeah. What gasoline engine?
I was just going to go there. There's only one.
Fit in the space of a spare tire.
A Boxer.
Potentially.
A Volkswagen owns Porsche.
Oh, that's a good point.
See?
Yeah, that is a really interesting. So maybe it's like a 718 Cayman engine, because it has to be a really flat design.
And the Boxer is the flattest of all designs.
Pretty smart, Dad. Because all of us journalists were talking about, like, it's probably the EA888 from like a Golf GTI, a little four-cylinder thing, but it's probably going to have to be a flat design. That's a great point.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
So that's very smart. Yeah.
Great, so when your son compliments you.
So there's a good shot that maybe it is going to be something like that, because it lives behind the rear axle, tucked up in that space.
But that's expensive, right? So what did they announce pricing? What are we talking about pricing?
So MSRP, before incentives, they're saying starting at about $60,000, as low as $52,500 after incentives.
On the truck or on the SUV?
I think I'm not super clear on that, but it sounds like, and I pushed them pretty hard, and it sounds like they're committing to that price. I'm not fully buying it. I think by 2027, like, look, Cybertruck was supposed to be $40,000.
It was 80 and then 100 for the first edition.
Yeah. F-150 Lightning was supposed to be 39, and it was that for exactly 27 minutes, and then it was 55, right? So I'm very skeptical of that.
I mean, someone in the comments said if they can keep those prices, they'll sell like hotcakes.
They will. They will. It's the interest in this thing.
And battery prices are coming down. I mean, right now, my cynical journalism hat on, I would say that works with a 20 kilowatt hour battery, but not a 100 kilowatt hour battery. But if we can get electric battery prices to come down, then maybe that's a realistic number. I got to tell you, Tommy, I'm just going to take my journalist hat off and put on my enthusiast hat. I love this vehicle. I love the vehicle so much that, in fact, we put an order down both for the truck and for the SUV. When are we looking to, you know, see them actually being produced and being put on sale?
So they've got a brand new facility, multi-billion dollar facility, which is being built right now. I'm told they're on track with that, although I have noticed that over the months, the first production date is moved from 2026 to 2027 for serial production vehicles. I said serial again. You got me on. Is it series or serial with production vehicles?
Series production vehicles.
Man, you're I'm all messed up. But 2027, which is a long way away. I mean, realistically, that's over 2 years away.
Yeah, but in car terms, it's not that far away.
Yeah.
Know, I mean, cars take a long time to develop and put out for sale. Now, let's talk about the interior in your video that you put out. You did get to go inside the truck. Did you like the interior?
Yes, it's a very – so the exterior is kind of like a cross a little bit between a Rivian and a Bronco. The interior is very Rivian, and I didn't have a chance to poke at the buttons. They wouldn't let me sit in it because they were very protective of these hand-built
– prototypes.
Yes, these are monstrously expensive. But from what I saw, it's very clear that like the zonal architecture and the software they're running is – probably likely Rivian software, which makes sense, right? Because Rivian had that huge Volkswagen investment recently.
Yeah,
I think so. Volkswagen can access the software.
$5 billion over time.
But even like the way the screens and the stocks and the overall just UI of the screens, the little I could see, look very R1, almost identical. So I think that the software is going to be like that. But the rest of the interior is pretty premium, right? We got leather seats in these vehicles. We've got the option for glass roofs or power retractable soft tops.
Ooh, like the Jeep.
Yeah, like the MySky One Touch top. Yeah. Those are called cabana tops, which is pretty cool.
I wonder if those are built by Webasto. I bet you they're Webasto.
I don't know who's going to make that.
Yeah, Webasto makes almost every convertible top.
And then the coolest part is the interiors are pretty similar truck to SUV, but they're saying you can get the truck with a bench front seat.
Oh, wow. That's fun.
Which is awesome. Really cool to see that. But all the commenters pointed out that there are no cup holders in the bench front seat truck. So they're going to have to figure out a solution to that. But very premium. There's a little bit of GMC Hummer, a little bit of Lincoln in there, especially with the center console situation. It's got a cool box, we learned after the presentation. So it's a pretty upscale interior from what I saw.
Yeah, take my money, dude. Take my money.
Yeah, but you're not going to get a cool box and a sliding fabric roof for $60,000.
No, it's going to be like $90,000. Yeah. I mean, if you compare it to Rivian, then your Rivian start, the R1T starts at what, $70,000?
Something like that. Yeah.
So I would think it would be in that neighborhood if I was being a betting man, Tommy. So what were you the most impressed by after you got hands on with these?
I was most impressed. I just keep getting blown away with the fact that they're willing to put this much investment into an all new platform with a solid axle, right? Like this is a technology that people are zooming away from, like it's going out of style, because it is going out of style. But like across the board, like Rivian, F-150 Lightning, Hummer, right? They're all independent suspension. And these guys are committed to hard recovery points, mechanical locking diffs, solid rear axle. I mean, that's fantastic, right? I did squeak out of them that there's going to be both steel and air suspension.
Yeah.
So a couple different suspension configurations. I love that the Terra, which is the SUV,
yep,
full-size spare tire. It's going to be optional on the Terra as well that lives in the bed. So that's kind of cool too, right? So a lot of good hardware stuff in just an attractive design. I think they just absolutely knocked this one out of the ballpark.
Yeah, you know, there's something really special about off-roading an electric vehicle where it's perfectly quiet so you can hear nothing, you know, but the crunching of the rocks under the tires or the babbling brook next door or the birds. It's a really unique and special experience. Especially in a world full of very loud and not particularly loud in a good way side-by-sides now, you know, because those things are not necessarily pleasant on the ears, especially with CVTs. So let's keep going.
Hang on. Should we cut to one of our segments?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go to. Yeah. So you had a chance, first and foremost, to actually look at some of the accessories that came with this. So let's cut to you showing us what accessories you can buy with your Scout.
All right, so we're here at this little design center they have set up for us to showcase some of the accessories. Now, these are some things that are going to be available or on the Scout from the design team. So let's check out what they got here. So
Let's check out this wheel. This is pretty cool. So it looks like we're going to have multiple wheel designs. This is that BFG KO3 that we saw on the concept trucks. KO3 is a brand new all-terrain tire by BF Goodrich, 35 by 12.5 R20. But I am told they are going to have smaller wheel options available. So for those looking to do some more extreme off-roading, it's cool that, that's going to be available. Now, if we come over here, check out some of the other potential accessories. We've got these cool Scout branded binoculars, which is a very cool look. There's a first look at the key as well. We didn't have a chance to see the key concept, but you can see lock, unlock, two buttons for the front and the trunk, and then a little panic button. And there's the back of it, kind of an elegant looking little key there. And then, of course, the compass, which is what we see on the overhead console in the Scout. Now, these MOLLE panels seem to be a big trend. We saw them like in the front of the vehicle, and it does appear that Scout is planning to have a number of attachments that will go on these MOLLE panels. So we see like the Nalgene water bottle, we see the axe, right? We see some gloves, ski helmet, which is pretty cool. And one detail which we didn't talk about at the reveal is the charging on the Scout. So this is actually going to use the NACS, the J3400 charging standard, better known as the Tesla charging standard. So 800 volt architecture, 350 kilowatt DC charging. No word on what like the AC charging is going to be like for home charging, but looks like at least a peak will be pretty high on the DC side. Then here's a concept of what the home charger might look like with that NACS connector there and Scout branding. Pretty elegant little setup. Now as we come over here, some more kind of Scout branded pieces of luggage, which is pretty neat. Very cool. And we can see some of the concept sketches. So if you're not watching on YouTube, what we're looking at here are what some of the initial design sketches look like for that Scout design, interior, exterior. And they have actually stuck very close to the original design concept, which is always very cool to see. Now, as we make our way over here, let's check out some of the materials and color options and that kind of thing. So I'm gonna pick up this little Polaroid here. That's actually the rear quarter panel of the very last 1980 Scout. And it looks like if we hold it next to some of the color swaths of the current Scout, they're actually modeling some of the new colors off of the old colors, which is cool, kind of a nice touch to the history of the brand. Of course, a long storied brand, right, with a lot of cool colors. So whenever you can incorporate those into your new vehicles, I'm always a big fan of that. Here we have like a good look at what some of the wood options are. I really like this open pore wood thing that they got going on. We saw that on the interior of the Scout truck. So here's kind of a lighter concept. And then over here, we've got like a darker color concept cutaway of the dashboard. Lots of bespoke design, right? We don't see these air vents. We don't see this little cubby on any Volkswagen products. It certainly is different from what we see on the Rivian. So it's really cool that, you know, this feels like its own character, its own vehicle. It doesn't feel like a rehash of some stuff that we've seen in the past. More color options here. One of the things they talked about is that blue on that truck had a throwback shade to it, but they've made it matte to kind of modernize it for the 21st century. And then coming over here, we get to see some more of the optional materials here. So the seat perforation feels really high quality. You can see the stitching. They can actually do some cool stuff with the perforation, like the plaid finish over there, which is once again retro vintage but with kind of a modern take. And then here we see another dash option, right, without the wood, with more of like a fabric material. So very cool that Scout's got a lot of different choices. Now, we don't have like the final configurations. We don't know what the finer color palettes or interiors are going to be like, but it looks like Scout's doing some really cool stuff. Are you on the interior design team? Do you mind? Can I do like a really quick interview with you? I'm not going to ask you any questions. So can you walk me through like some of the colors that we saw today? Like, are these throwback colors to older vehicles?
Yeah, absolutely they are. So this is the Tahitian red. So that was the last Scout. So the last Scout is actually, you can see it right here, which was in Tahitian red poly. So we just did a modern variation of that.
Very cool. And that blue, is that also a throwback color?
It is. So the first Scout, which was the Terror, the truck, uh-huh, that was a metallic blue. And so we took that and made it a more modern twist.
Very cool. Can I talk to you about some interior materials things?
Sure.
So walk me through this block of wood And then this crazy wood that you have that we saw on like the truck. So what's the story there and how does that work?
So this block of wood is hemp wood. So it is like compressed. It uses a soy-based resin. It's very sustainable. A lot of the parts that, you know, come off of this and the shavings that come off of it can actually be used in other products to create an even more sustainable story. So it's a fantastic product, very on with what we're looking at, right? And then if you come here, this is a different grain pattern, so once you start to kind of grind it down, you can really see through the block. You can see that you get this kind of striation pattern. It's really natural, really organic, really beautiful, and that kind of true color is showing through on it.
And when you say like hemp wood, is this like a grown and manufactured wood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a byproduct of the hemp industry. Yeah.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, super interesting. Okay. And then what about like seat material? So is this a cowhide? Is this a manufactured material? What is this?
This is leather.
Okay, cool. So that's real genuine leather.
Yeah, okay. Real leather. And then, you know, just like Scott had said in the presentation, we're looking at natural markings. So, you know, not cutting out things like bug bites, scarring, patina, all of that sort of thing. Really celebrate that it actually is leather.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So like each truck might be a little different on the inside.
That's the idea. I mean, even between the two, right? Even between the two concept cars that we saw today, there's slight variations, slight differences. You'll notice some areas are, you know, wearing a little bit different, and that's kind of the vibe that we're trying to get.
So one of the cool things that Scott talked about, or maybe Chris did a little bit, is like what you're able to do with perforation and kind of some of the unique patterns that you can incorporate. Can you talk me through that a little bit?
Sure. So on the Terra, we wanted to show a little bit of a nod to plaid. So you know, the design team worked on creating this sort of plaid pattern that would go across the entire bench seat.
Okay.
And really just sort of pull in homage with that. So this is different hole sizes through the leather and some plowed through stitching. But, you know, from a glance, when you get farther back, it just gives you this beautiful plaid appearance.
Very cool. Let's walk over here a little bit and talk about this blue. So one of the things I noticed are like a variety of glossy finishes and matte finishes. Are you going to be offering both?
So we're just talking about the concept cars at this point.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. But this is the color that we saw on the truck.
Yes,
is that correct? Okay,
yes.
Very cool. And that's a throwback to the VIN number one, basically. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about it is it kind of has like a modern twist. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you most proud of when it comes to colors and materials? What are you most excited about?
That's a difficult choice. I mean, I'm excited about a lot of it.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'm Tommy, by the way.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. I'll let you get back to it. So there you go, folks. So quick look at kind of like what Scout's doing with some of the interior materials, interior design, some grown, like we talked about the hemp wood, some of which is more natural, like the cow leather, and how they're able to kind of change and incorporate and shift that around, which is very cool. So that was just a quick look at some interior stuff, some accessory stuff, talked about charging a little bit.
Tommy, do you feel like they understand the American buyer? Because that's always been a problem with Volkswagen, right? I always feel like with Volkswagen, they make all their decisions in Wolfsburg, where the company is headquartered, for better or worse, and then, you know, they're like, Americans will like this. And a good example of that is it just took them forever to get the ID Buzz here, right? The ID Buzz, which is like the quintessential Volkswagen from the 60s in America, has been on sale in Europe for like 4 years, 3 years now, and they're finally getting it here this year. Do you feel like this is a company that's run by Germans or run by Americans?
Well, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but I do really get the impression that it's run by Americans. Like, yes, at this massive event, I mean, we can talk about that a little bit later, there were a few of the German quote-unquote overlords. Like the CFO of Volkswagen was there, right?
Yeah.
But
one of the board members.
But like talking to like the CEO of Scout, his team, the people I talked to, they're Americans, right? The engineering team is based in Michigan. They're manufacturing it in South Carolina. And like stuff like towing numbers, right? 10,000 pounds for the Terra, 7,000 pounds for the Traveler, and then payload numbers. They're both saying for both these that they're going to be around 2,000 pounds of payload, right? That's good stuff. No European brand, as far as I know of, is putting 35-inch tall tires on a vehicle from the factory, right?
Yeah, I mean,
like that would be blasphemous in Germany.
My concern has always been that Volkswagen, you know, does off-roading in a European fashion, which is different than in America, because obviously Europe is full of people and stuff, and they don't have the Wild West that we have. But speaking of Americans, you did have a chance to talk to one of them, right? Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I spoke to one of the guys in charge of product planning.
Okay.
So he makes the decisions on what's going in these vehicles, and he's pretty instrumental at deciding what they're going to look like and what the feature content's going to be like. So we're going to cut to an interview with Shaheen now, and we can learn a little bit more about how they decided to make these vehicles like they did. All right, so we're here with Shaheen. And Shaheen, can you introduce yourself, talk about what you do with Scout?
Hey, man, I am Shaheen Karimian, the head of product marketing here at Scout Motors.
Okay, so what does that mean in real-world application?
Product marketing, as it relates to automotive, is sort of the specification of the vehicle and the resulting product offer to customers. So equipment on board, contents, configurations, packages, options, pricing, how the colors and materials are spec'd onto cars, all that fun sort of customer facing, when I get to go buy it, this is the thing I'm looking for stuff.
Nice. I'm just going to scoot this up. But that was perfect. I just want that hitting. So Shaheen, I mean, the first thing we got to talk about is how did Scout convince the Volkswagen parent group to give you the nine figures it takes to do an all new ground up platform?
Yeah. So the cool thing about Scout is that it is genuinely a small company that is an independent company. And it was started by a scrappy group of folks that volunteered onto this project for a long time until it became a independent endeavor. Scott Keogh, my boss, a really fun, engaging CEO to work with, Ryan Decker from Strategy, Chris Condon, the CFO, and a handful of scrappy engineers created this company and brought it to where it was when I joined as employee roughly 95, 14 months ago.
Okay.
And now we've scaled to 500-600 Scouts since then.
So,
did that answer your question?
Yeah, man. Yeah. But I still like it. I have to ask. I mean, is this a Rivian underneath the skin? Is it another Volkswagen underneath the skin?
It is not under the skin another car.
Okay.
It is our platform with our bodies on top of that. It's our designs. So it is a Scout proprietary body on frame chassis with all the benefits you saw up there on the keynote today with the Traveler and Terra bodies that we've designed. Where you will see efficiencies of the backing of the VW group are things that don't impact the customer, like say a window regulator as an example or other items from the catalog that we can phone in and say, hey, is this something that's robust? Is this something that works? Is this something that ain't broke?
Right.
So let's use it there and find those efficiencies in manufacturing and production.
So because we have a big off-road audience, walk me through some of the hardware that makes the Scout so unique.
Looking at the platform,
yeah.
I mean, right there, in terms of ruggedness, body on frame, it's the tried and true mechanical concept that off-roaders love. We've got a solid rear axle with an integrated drive unit. Between the two drive units on board, you're looking at nearly 1,000 pound-feet of torque. You've got lockers on the front and rear axles. You've got a variety of suspension options. There's an on-road tuned static suspension, an off-road tuned static suspension, as well as an active air spring.
Really?
So an
okay.
air spring with active damping. So it's sort of optimized for the function that the customer wants the vehicle to fulfill.
Right. So we learned in the presentation, right, locking diffs, sway bar disconnect, right, all of the solid rear axle. I mean, are there going to be like various trim configurations of Scout? Is that how it's planned out?
There will be a variety of hardware and sort of equipment combinations. We'll share more on that as we get closer to
okay.
SOP,
cool.
Start of production.
Yeah.
Sorry for the acronym soup, everybody.
Big cheese over here.
But we do anticipate sort of reduced complexity when it comes to what we want to manufacture in our brand new factory, but then offer customers a lot of ways to accessorize and make their Scouts their own.
So one of the things I noticed in the press release, which kind of struck me as something I have never seen this before in a press release, is that roughly 80% of the components are user serviceable, and it even talks about repairability in a driveway. So like, what the heck does that mean in the real world, and what does that represent for the brand?
When it comes to building an ecosystem of a product, we
okay.
want this product to be repairable in the field. We want this product to be serviceable in the field. We want this product to be one that isn't left stranded, that you have to phone home to get help with. We also anticipate doing mobile service appointments in someone's driveway or at their place of work as needed.
Yeah.
So as we go forward with our growth plan and how we have that customer relationship, that's where that stat is coming in.
Oh,
it's about just simple things. It could be as simple as wipers and tires. It could be as advanced as maybe changing out a drive shaft that's been snapped or a tie rod that's been snapped. Or
yeah.
Who knows what it is. But we want to have a compelling total cost of ownership for the customer with low service needs, but also understand that vehicles do need to be serviced and do offer that in a compelling way.
So 2027 production start is what I was reading in the release. Like, where are these things going to be sold? Is there like a dealer franchise starting? Is it going to be direct consumer? How can someone go out and buy this vehicle?
So there's actually right now down this hill a great workshop with our VP
of
Growth,
okay.
Cody Thacker, who has a beautiful mind when it comes to this sort of comprehensive customer ecosystem and ownership experience. We'll have a variety of Scout workshops across the country. I believe the early locations are identified as well in that press release. Should you have any questions about where those are going to be. But we have a phased rollout plan approach showing where we anticipate having customers, how we'll service those customers, and a combination of sort of retail and service environments.
So I think the biggest surprise of the night was the range extender, because you know the rhetoric we got for the first launch of the vehicle was fully electric. What was the decision to add that range extender into the concept?
So we're in this moment where there's tension in the EV adoption moment. We see headlines saying like, oh no, EVs are over, EV growth has stopped. But in reality, EV growth is as great as ever. EV growth continues to grow in terms of segments and volume sold year over year in the US markets. And we see customers telling us we like EVs. EV brands, EV products are winning the hearts of customers and they want that experience. Where they have concerns is not range anxiety, because you now have vehicles on the market with 200, 300, 400, sometimes 500 miles of range. But it's a refueling anxiety. It's something brought about by, I don't want to compromise my lifestyle to get the benefits of this great EV product. So how can we deliver a solution that gives you the best of EV, things like a front trunk, which everyone seems to love, and with Halloween coming up, I know we'll see some frunk or treat activities on some of the EV-oriented forums. But one pedal driving, silent drivetrains, all those sort of known EV benefits and that great ownership experience, like a connected ecosystem of apps, and then unlocking the ability to refuel anywhere thanks to having that range extender on board.
Okay, so I have to ask a question, and Shaheen's going to tell me he can't answer because I've been around this industry, but specific specs, like what is that range extender and what is the battery capacity? Is that been announced or is that coming?
That'll be coming.
Okay. Yeah. I told you I knew the answer. Dang it. Now, what are you most excited about? Like, what makes the Scout different from not only the other EV off-roaders on the market, but the other more conventional off-roaders like Defender, like Wrangler, like Bronco? What's the value proposition here?
What I'm personally excited about, I want to address that one first, is the ease that this product will be delivering to customers. It's a car that feels, it's a vehicle that feels familiar. It's a product that you could throw the keys to any one of your buddies or family members, and it's not this overwhelming experience. There's modern EVs where they've become this almost fearful thing of you get in a car and you don't know, does this one have a start button? Does this not? Do I put my foot on the brake? Is there a screen? Am I plugging in? Is it CarPlay or no CarPlay? Is it, what's this ecosystem? And beyond that, what's the value proposition for customers? It's, I'd like to think that they do see this vehicle as a versatile multi-tool, and it's that product that just adds to your lifestyle. It's one that sort of does enough of everything to keep you satisfied without creating friction in your life.
And then final question, pricing announced before incentives, $60,000. Is that a real number?
That's a real number.
Because looking at what we saw out there with some of like the design and the interior, right? And obviously it may vary on trim, but like that's going to be real, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
The 60,000 number is a real number, and that as low as $50,000 with available incentives number is a real target for us, pending the availability of those incentives at the time of production. But the vehicle you saw today is sort of our hero moment.
Right.
Some of these things will be optional. Like on the Traveler, that spare tire carrier is optional, and that's part of the benefit of being able to take that off-road equipment and give it to the off-road customer without creating compromises in the base vehicle.
And then, genuinely final question. Manufacturing in the U.S., is that correct? South Carolina?
Yeah, Blythewood.
What would you respond to people saying, you know, Volkswagen's a bear company, this is not truly an American brand? How would you come back at that?
I would say it's American jobs, it's American manufacturing, it's American designs, it's American development.
So designed in the U.S.?
Designed at the Novi, Michigan facility that I work at every day.
So design engineering, all U.S.-based? Okay, manufacturing. And I think, Shaheen and I were talking at dinner, that is one of the most interesting things that I did not expect about this reveal, is like I expected, you know, the German overlords looking over and you know, talking about it from that Volkswagen perspective, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of that in this company.
Yeah, I mean, you saw Dr. Antlitz there today. He's the global CFO, COO of Volkswagen Group. He's here, he's supporting us, he's engaged, he's listening, he's seeing the same things you're seeing. And we have a company that we are here to sort of create a customer opportunity that's exciting, that's for this market, that's for these customers here in America. And that should be a great business opportunity for all parties involved.
And if folks want to find out more or reserve, where can they go?
ScoutMotors.com today. You can make a reservation and indicate your preferred body style and energy system.
Okay, that's cool. And then, not going to hold you to it, but rough on sale date.
Initial production starting 2027.
Okay. Very well PR trained, my friend. Folks, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Tommy.
Well, that was interesting, Tommy. It's really nice to hear it from, you know, the people who are actually running the company or making the decisions. How about ground clearance? Did they talk about that?
They did. So it's about a foot of ground clearance.
Not bad. 12 inches. It's good. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, especially if it's got air suspension and you can jack it up higher.
3 feet of water fording ability.
Okay, good.
Is some of the numbers we're talking about. It's got real all-terrain tires on it, KO3s. It's got recovery points in the front. It's got recovery points in the rear. One of the interesting tidbits, which I learned, is that the chief technology officer of this vehicle.
CTO?
It's been with Volkswagen for a long time, and he actually produced one of my all-time favorite forgotten off-roaders.
What's that?
He was the guy in charge of the first-gen Volkswagen Touareg.
Yeah, I was going to say, Volkswagen knows how to build an off-roader, right? The first-gen Touareg and the first-gen Cayenne both had a low range and had, like, skid plates. Those are rare ducks, really cool and really good off-road, and people still look for those.
So they actually – he lives in the States now.
Oh, okay.
So he moved to the U.S., I was really, really grilling him at dinner before I kind of knew what this vehicle was about. And I mean, they from an underbody protection standpoint, I still would like to learn a little bit more, but from a recovery point standpoint, wheel travel articulation, it all seems to be here. I think it's going to be really tough to keep this vehicle under 8,000 pounds when you're moving this much size, this much frontal area, this much tire, with an electric powertrain, you're just going to need such a huge battery that I think weight could be an issue.
All right, well, let's get into the weeds because it is electric. So first and foremost, we haven't talked about this yet, charging. Did they talk about, is it 400 or 800 volt architecture? Did they talk about charging speeds?
800 volt architecture.
Oh, that's great. Wow.
350 kilowatt.
Wow, that's high.
DC fast charging. And they didn't give me a charging time, but they made it seem like 10 to 80% was going to be right around that 20-minute time mark.
NACS or CCS?
NACS, J3400. So it's got the Tesla charging standard, which is very cool. It's got like a line of power outlets next to the plug as well. It's got power outlets in the frunk. It's got an air compressor in the frunk.
So it's got an air compressor. Yeah. So you can air down and air up.
Yeah, you can air up.
Love that. How about the truck in terms of the bed? Anything unique there? Is it pretty standard? Like, does it have a weird tailgate that splits 40-60 or something, you know, that the American manufacturers are now all fighting about?
So from what I saw at the presentation, very standard tailgate, 5.5-foot bed. The rear of the truck is very Rivian in how it works. And you got a wide tailgate. It swings down. And then there's actually a little panel that drops down to fill the gap between the tailgate and the start of the bed. I don't know material composition. I think if I recall, these concepts, these prototypes are full carbon fiber.
Of course.
Because I learned you can't make a prototype out of composite materials like fiberglass.
Yeah.
Because what can happen is they can actually, in the heat of the sun, they can actually pop panels off. So they made them out of carbon fiber.
How about a rolling tonneau cover on the back?
This one doesn't have one.
What I saw that was cool, though, is it does have that little tailgate on the SUV where you could like sit in the back.
Yeah.
Kind of like Range Rover style, you know?
So they also brought in the guy who did the swing out tire carrier on the Touareg, which is pretty funny. But swing that out of the way. It's got a part that lifts up, right? And then, like you said, just like a Range Rover, it's got a little baby guy that folds down. And then it's a fully rubber-lined rear cargo area.
So for all of our international viewers, any talk of this being sold abroad?
No, only
America, huh?
Yes, they're really focusing on the American market. So maybe it'll make its way overseas. Maybe it'll make its way to Australia. I think there's probably a good chance of that. But first and foremost, this is gonna come to the States.
All right, and then you had a chance to speak with somebody else. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so super cool guy named John, John Glancy. And he's kind of a legend in the Scout world.
Okay.
Because in 1990... he bought the rights to all of the spare parts and dies and tooling that International still had for the Scout. And then he started a company, he started a couple companies, but one of them is Super Scout Specialists. And they're like the go-to guys. If you have like a Scout 2 or an 800 and you need a quarter panel or whatever, he runs a company that sells all the bits you need. So I had an interview with John, really, really nice guy, really passionate about the brand. But I wanted to get the perspective of somebody that lives, breathes, eats, international scouts what he thought of the direction that international or scout is taking.
All right, well, let's roll that interview now.
So now we're here with John, and John is a legend in the international scout world and other international. So John, can I have you introduce yourself?
Well, my name's John Glancy. I've been around scouts for about 40 years. I started at an international dealership selling parts, and it kind of blossomed out into a full-line business selling to other scout dealers, and we ended up in, 1990, buying the scout parts business from Navistar at the time.
Unreal.
And we're still going, and we've got like a dozen dealers, and we sell parts all over the world, so still at it.
So John's being a little humble here, but if you own a scout and you need a part, there's not a 90%, there's a 100% chance you've been to John's website, because he's kind of the man when it comes to international parts.
Or I sold it to the other dealer.
So exactly.
We help everybody. We try to.
John, because you've been so plugged into this community and you know, you've been supporting owners for so many years, I think you know better than most about what this brand means to fans, right, who own these vehicles. What does Scout going forward need to do to be a success again in the U.S.? If you could give them a piece of advice, what would it be?
One of them I think they're doing. They're going to announce it, should I say?
You can, sure. Yes, it's going to go up after.
So they're going to have a range extender gas motor, if you haven't heard that.
Yep.
And that is important. And I asked them, hypothetically, I'm out on the trail, and I got plenty of gas cans, and I got this charger motor. Could I theoretically sit there and charge the thing enough to get me out? And they're saying theoretically, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest problems with scout people is they're worried about the electric part of it.
I see that a lot.
So, and darn it, they're very particular. I mean, Jeep put out a 392 four-door, the Wrangler Rubicon.
Yep.
And I've watched videos on that. It's the most capable Jeep they've ever built, people say. Mm-hmm. And scout people would love to have that, but maybe they will. I'm hearing this new scout with electric is gonna be so rugged and off-roadable that it may give that 392 Jeep a run for its money.
Do you think the brand is gonna struggle with the Volkswagen connection?
No, it's actually a plus for them because they've got the developers engineering from Porsche, you know, all the tools in their arsenal that other small companies don't have.
Right.
So. I don't think, as long as VW is in good shape, because really the truth is, you know it, Stellantis, the rest of them are not in good shape right now.
Yeah.
The world is in a funny place.
It's a weird spot.
But we've been through worse and we will get through it. And I think VW and the rest of them will survive.
And John, one of the things that I think is pretty cool about this brand is Zach was on that trip that you guys did from Fort Wayne down to Blythewood.
And, yeah, I thought we'd met.
Yeah, he was down there. And it's really cool that they're interacting and they're working with people like you, right?
Right.
Who are from the community.
That's true.
So they're not throwing away their heritage and starting from scratch.
Well, think about it. They re-brought out the Bronco. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did anything like this for the Bronco.
Maybe not to this extent.
Community.
Yeah.
Smaller, probably, which is what Scout could have done. They could have just had a few sitting around to look at and just moved on. But they're really recognizing our community, and they're trying to respect the history.
You think they're doing a good job at it?
There are a few things they've tripped up on, but they're a new company. They haven't existed that long, and they're learning.
Okay.
And they don't. If they mess something up, they don't mean to, as far as I can tell.
So being an old binder guy, are you excited?
I am.
About this? You are.
I heard somebody who was a model has been up on the hill and got to sit in it, and they told me he was stunned.
Stunned?
Stunned when he saw it. And this is a hardcore scout owner.
Okay, interesting.
Who happens to model, so.
A hardcore scout owner who happens to model.
He was stunned.
That doesn't even exist, huh?
For some men's magazines or I don't know. I don't know what he was doing. But they hired him and they wanted to do shots inside the scout, I heard.
Yeah.
And they did, and he was stunned.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
That's too funny.
Yeah.
So going back to your world with these older scouts for a minute here, what do you think of the trend in recent years where like these went from being kind of like a niche, you know, community of really hardcore enthusiasts to now exploding out into the world and, you know, drawing attention from people that maybe aren't cars and the rest of the mods? Like, what do you think of the crazy increase in prices? How do you feel about that?
Well, it's the increase in the prices is kind of crazy. I mean, Some of them are being built and they're getting $250,000 out of a custom built job. You can still buy a $50,000 Scout. It's not as nice, but and it helps us be able to buy more parts.
It's probably good for
to
your
supply
business.
More parts. Yeah, right. It is. It keeps us, I mean, a lot of the things, the challenge in our industry is a lot of our original vendors, which I got with the Lightline purchase, they want you to buy 1,000 items or 10,000 of this particular, you know, a cable or whatever the part is. And that becomes very difficult. And this helps us make more money so we can supply those parts that are hard to come by.
John, can you explain that? So I was talking to Jim a little bit earlier, and he said that you purchased the rights to, well, what did you buy?
In 1990, we purchased the parts support business from Navistar.
Oh, okay.
Which included the tooling, the contracts, all the suppliers that make parts.
Wow.
The use of the name, and we were supposed to have a seat at the table when if International ever came out with a Scout. And in fact, 2008, they almost did.
Did they really?
There was a joint venture with Mahindra.
Okay.
Mahindra was going to build the chassis, build the body, and they were going to assemble them here in the U.S.
Are you serious?
And they had a little V6 that's made in South America.
Okay.
International. But
did they ever
I believe
do
it was the crash. I saw drawings.
Yeah, okay.
But I never saw any finished product. But the crash of the housing crash and what happened in 2007 and 8, which pretty much killed Hummer. It killed, if
Pontiac.
You know the XTs,
yeah.
The CXT, the MXT, that whole family.
Went away,
but if you think about it, they had the CXT, which was the biggest International, then you had the RXT, a little smaller, then you had the MXT, which was a capable off-road vehicle, then a Scout.
It was supposed to slot in.
Just like Hummer.
Wow.
You had the H1, you had the H2, you had the H3, you had the SUV, the Soot.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they were going with that model.
Best name ever, Soot.
Yeah, exactly.
It's super interesting. And then it all kind of collapsed in that.
It did.
Hand.
It did. And so no more CXTs and no more Scout program.
So when you bought that massive package in 1990, did it come with just a warehouse full of old stampings?
Oh, their warehouses. So they had one in Baltimore, they had one in Dallas, they had one in Chicago. At the time, my partner of Rod Phillips of Get 'Em Up Scout, we got a warehouse opened in Colorado Springs.
Oh, cool.
Shipped a lot of it there.
Yeah.
And then I had a big farm with a barn, and they shipped truckloads and truckloads there before I got my shop up and going.
Wow.
So we emptied out their warehouses, and then tooling, that cost us a little money because the tooling that stamps these and the quarter panels, which we still have,
mm-hmm.
we had to move it like 3 times. And each time the trucking costs were real expensive because that you'd ship it to one facility, they'd go out of business, and then we'd have to find someone else to stamp the parts.
Interesting.
And we had to move that tooling, and then we lost some of it.
What were some of the coolest treasures you found in that acquisition?
Probably new door assemblies and...
Wow.
The 80 grills with the square headlights were very hard to come by. There was an inventory of that.
Did you that blue truck, that first VIN, did mm-hmm. that come as part of that acquisition?
No.
Okay.
No. That belonged to Phil Coonrod.
Okay.
Or still does.
Huh.
And he got it from a farm, I think, somewhere in Fort Wayne.
Wow.
And ended up taking it to Colorado. And then years and years went by, and I believe there was nothing left of it but a chassis.
Yeah,
so,
what Jim was saying.
Yeah, they just rebuilt it.
So being in the aftermarket and really replacement part industry, John, do you see yourself pivoting to working on the new generation?
It's possible that we might do some accessories and some bolt-on type thing. They've talked about maybe even giving us one to play with for a year.
Cool.
Don't quote me on that, I'm not
sure.
No,
that's fine.
But as far as working on them, my problem, and maybe you could tell me this, as far as EVs, is that you'd have to buy millions of dollars worth of service equipment to be able to work on them. So I don't know about that. But we would love to do the accessory part and maybe be a purchase point.
Okay.
Because they may be going with the Tesla model.
Right.
We don't think they're going to have dealers.
Yeah.
But we'd love to be a pickup point.
I mean, I think certainly you're right. Anything powertrain related is likely going to require specialty equipment,
right.
computer scanning equipment, right, to work on. But I'm hoping if this company is paying attention to what you guys are doing, to what enthusiasts want, stuff like suspension,
right? Yep. Wheel tire packages, lighting packages, right?
Things we can bolt on.
Yeah, bolt-on stuff. Yeah.
We would be interested
in that.
It'd
be really cool to see.
Because anything we do, some of our enthusiasts think we're traitors or we're, you know.
Yeah, I get that a lot online.
You know what I'm saying?
I see that a lot online.
But they don't understand. We need to make more money off something so that we can buy more vintage parts. Mm-hmm. Whatever they do is going to enhance what we do. And they're also bringing attention to our beloved Scout vehicles.
Well, it's kind of like Porsche, right? You couldn't have the 911 without the Cayenne, right?
True.
You gotta make the volume stuff if you want to support the community. No, I think, John, it was great talking to you because it's refreshing because, you know, like I'm on the Facebook pages as you are. And you just see so much negativity specifically toward the EV thing.
Right.
And I think the smartest thing this brand did from an enthusiast standpoint is add that range extender.
Yes,
even
that's very important.
That small little
I told them that you got my attention.
Yeah.
That's something that I think people can hold on to. And as technology evolves, there may be more to that. More range extender. And who knows, hydrogen motor? I mean, it's endless what they can do. And I've heard there may be a two-door pickup.
Yeah.
They may do a smaller 800 first-generation type two-door
be
Scout.
Awesome.
And call it a Scout.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
So who knows what they're going to do in the future,
like,
but they got to succeed.
One thing that would be so cool, don't take my advice, I'm just a snot-nosed kid who does this on YouTube, but like take your rally here, right? I would love to see you guys offer this graphics package for the new Scout.
On Scout,
you know? Or like those wheels,
well,
right?
I'll tell you what, I got a secret here.
Yep.
For the engineers.
That's super cool.
They haven't seen it yet, but they're frothing to see this. And I'm told these colors, some of these colors, original colors, are going to be available.
That's super cool.
So I got a little
thing. John's got a little secret up his...
I may let him borrow it.
That's awesome. So. Well, John, it was an absolute pleasure speaking with
you. Yes, sir.
Thank you for what you do with your community and for keeping these old rigs on the road. And I think the smartest thing you said, and just piggybacking off that, is like, for those that are upset about the new Scout, right? There's only so many 80s and 800s and 2s on the road.
That's true.
There's not going to be any more.
Right.
So keep those cars on the road. Go to John, right? Use his vast knowledge and resources. But then be excited about the new stuff, because that's what's going to enable people like John to keep
that's
the
exactly
cars
right. It's only going to help us, not hurt us.
Right.
Yes, we can pray for a 392 Scout someday. It's not going to happen, but you never know. We can dream, can't we?
We can dream.
Absolutely.
Dogs a dreamer over
that's
here,
right.
folks. Yeah.
And always remember, Scout still leads the way.
Look, what I love, Tommy, is that we have so much competition, right? First, we only had Jeep, and I'm sure Jeep loved that, but if you wanted to go off-road, you had one serious choice, and that was, and there were other ones, but for the most part, if you were in America, Jeep was the go-to brand for off-roading. And then not that long ago, of course, Ford brought back the Bronco and benchmark the Jeep, and now you had a choice of two. And then, of course, when Rivian came out, an all-electric car company, they also looked at the active off-road lifestyle, and so their cars are also very off-roady. And now, of course, Tesla came out with the Cybertruck, and I was actually looking at some advertising that they're doing, and it's all based on also off-roading. And now another brand has come out, and we've got a third or a fourth or fifth at this point choice. And I got to tell you, the reason that we put money down on both of them is that I am super excited, especially with the range extender, because if you want to get a Tesla Cybertruck and you want to go farther than, let's say, the 300-ish miles that the thing officially gets, you got to get one of those giant batteries and put it in the bed, which makes your bed useless.
Well,
right?
They have like an electric range extender.
Yeah, it's a giant battery put in the bed. Whereas with this, you can actually, like you said, and this gets me super excited, get a jerry can and then conquer the world.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, and look, this is targeting vehicles like the Hummer EV, right? SUV and truck. More expensive, a little bigger. Specs though, you know, 1,000 pound-feet of torque in the Scout, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds.
I think unless this comes in at $120,000, the Hummer EV like lives in a different world above it, right? That to me is like, that's like the ultimate, like, look, I don't think a lot of people are taking Hummer EVs off road. Let me put it that way.
Well, and I'm not sure
You did, of course.
Yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm kind of skeptical of the $60,000 price point. Seeing,
and I think that's fair.
Seeing the amount of quality that they put into that interior, I just don't, I mean, obviously these are probably going to be more, right? $60,000 base for like maybe one without lockers, right? Maybe smaller tires. Still, I want to get a better sense of what those are going to be like. Now, the other thing I want to just talk about briefly is this was the most over-the-top press launch I've ever been on.
That's so, saying a lot. You've been on a lot of press launches.
So this is a company that's being manufacturing South Carolina, based in Virginia, right? Engineering in Michigan. So they had it in Nashville. Not really sure why. But they flew everybody in, right? You get to the airport and boom, we're immediately greeted with this huge Scout banner across the airport.
Cool.
Yeah. Then we get in the shuttle to the airport. Along the highway, they had placed Scout billboards so that we could see them from the bus getting to the hotel. Then they rented the most over-the-top five-star resort in Franklin, Tennessee I've ever seen. I mean, it's like something out of a movie. The whole thing, rented the whole thing out, and every single aspect of this hotel they managed to Scout brand.
Like napkins?
The napkins, the lighting fixtures, the carpets were Scout branded. They had two DJs. They had a live band. They had like the tables from Harry Potter for us to eat at.
Yeah.
With each table was covered from front to back with fresh vegetables. They hired professional chefs to come in and cater. I mean, it was crazy the amount of expense they put into this.
Well, you know, you maybe answered your own question. You said they put in a lot of money, but imagine if they had done this in LA, right? You could multiply that number by like five for the same kind of, you know, quality of Scout branding that it would take, right?
I don't know.
A billboard on the 405 is going to be a lot more than a billboard.
That's true. Yeah. But the area we were in,
I'm not saying Nashville's.
No, right? we weren't in Nashville.
Or Franklin.
That's like Beverly Hills of the South. I mean, it was. So I'll give you a perspective. Driving through Franklin, I saw four G-Wagons and three Cybertrucks.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing.
In the course of like these are huge mansions that they have. I mean, it's very bougie.
Yeah, it's bougie, but still the cost of doing it in New York would be much higher.
I think this was probably close to a $10 million press launch.
Which I don't know what the budgets are for that.
If I had to take a random stab in the dark, I mean, it was incredible how much they committed to the Scout brand. And I think part of that was because they knew the Volkswagen exec team, some of them were going to be there, right? And they knew that they needed to make a good first impression on the media. And I think they kind of nailed that.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, you know, I think they nailed it. I love the look of both of them.
I also missed.
Take my money, please, Volkswagen/Scout, yes?
Because I was filming, I didn't have a chance to do the zip lining or the cooking classes.
Oh, poor Tommy.
Or the woodworking classes.
Oh, for God's
Couldn't
sakes.
Do any of it. I really missed out here.
Look, if anybody at TFL is going on press launches to go woodworking, then that person probably shouldn't be a TFL.
It was very funny seeing the executives, though. Like, you can tell that some of them are really buttoned down and like they were encouraged to wear jeans because it was like an outdoor brand, right?
Sure, yeah.
And that was very entertaining to see some of these really buttoned down, up mucky mucks in these like casual clothes. I really appreciated that commitment.
Well, Tommy, I just want to say thank you for going out there and not going woodworking or
Zip line day. I missed the zip lining.
Yeah, but instead you got two great videos. So if you do want to see what these things look like, head on over to alltfl.com because you got two videos and you had exclusive access to these vehicles, which was nice. So thank you very much, Scout, for giving us that. But I think those videos are killing it. They're like 150,000 views already, each one. And I think you did a great job in presenting the cars, especially that's something that if you guys haven't experienced yourself when there's 300 other journalists to kind of get that information out, get it out right, and get it out first is very stressful. So it was well worth you not going ziplining, Tommy. That's what I'm going to say with that.
All right, folks. All right. So let us know what you think in the comments section below, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely efficiently and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to AeroHit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.